Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses, and sometimes I interview them twice, which is kind of what's happening today. I just did this phenomenal interview with Jason Wyatt, who you're about to meet. We lost the whole interview and we're recording again. The premise of the interview is this. I kind of thought that when it came to online shopping, the major guys just kind of got all the business, the Amazons of the world, the Walmarts to some degree, etc. But what I found as I researched today's guest is that there are these pockets of marketplaces, people who have their tribe at a certain site, who go there on a regular basis, and who want to buy from that site, and that the marketplaces on those sites actually are thriving, growing. And today's guest is one of the entrepreneurs who helped build this kind of business. His name is Jason Wyatt. He is the founder of Marketplacer. They bring tribes together to shop in new ways. They own a couple of sites that you'll find out about in this interview, where they do content and commerce through these marketplaces. They've also created a platform where other businesses can use their software, their know-how to create their own marketplaces. And finally, they also do analytics and insights for marketplaces. We'll find out how he built this business, all thanks to two great sponsors. The first will help you hire your next great developer. It's called TopTal. And the second will help you close more sales. It's called PipeDrive. Okay. Jason, I'm so worried we're going to lose this. Thanks for doing this interview a second time. What time is it where you are right now?
Well, it was 7 o'clock. The positive thing about all of this is now 8 o'clock. It's not as early as the first interview, so I might be a little bit more awake.
So we can do it twice as well. Before you started this marketplace business about 10 years ago, you were working for General Motors. What's one thing that you learned from working for such a big automaker?
The really good thing about the big businesses is they've got some great processes that they've developed over, in some cases, 50 years. So I think of one thing that I took out of General Motors, and it's that lean manufacturing mentality. It's around when you're creating a small startup, which we were a really small startup, how do you create it in an efficient way where you just haven't got this ton of wastage kicking in? So we adopted some, we didn't adopt all of them, but we adopted some of the really good bits of lean manufacturing in our startup and eliminated some of those wastage items that walks their way through your business.
What's an example? One thing that you don't do that's wasteful that other entrepreneurs, other startups do?
Yeah, it's really, it's a case by case. So there's a couple of things that Lean gave us that was really, really helpful. And that was around getting a really good cost structure in from day one and analyzing the cost structure. So, and every business say they analyze the cost structure, but how do you really analyze the cost structure? So things like, and when we started, it was very different to today. So you didn't have an AWS, which just, you know, or an Azure who have just nailed server and hosting back then. So we were incredibly efficient in the very early days when it was incredibly expensive to get server infrastructure up and running around our server infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We were incredibly efficient around our development processes and around our pipeline to get into development processes. So we were really disciplined about what we build, when we build it, and the benefit that it was going to have to the customer. We didn't build things for the sake of building things. We spent time before it got into dev to really understand the needs of the customers from both a seller and a purchaser. And then really factored those things and what they were going to deliver to the end as an end result before building them.
I'm kind of surprised that you would go into such a big company. I mean, I've heard about your background where you as a kid, you were working in an ice cream shop and then you said, hey, you know what? This actually is not the full potential that I could reach here at my age. How old were you at the time?
I think I was in the legal actually. I was 13 and a half.
13. And what was the thing that you noticed when you looked around for something else to do?
Yeah, so I started scooping ice cream because everybody loves ice cream, right? And I wanted to make everybody's lives a bit happier. And I probably put on a few too many kilos doing it, but it was great fun. Mm-hmm. But it was clearly hard work. You know, you're getting paid minimum wage, you're sitting there scooping ice creams. And then I was a really mad avid tennis player at the time. And I thought, hang on a second here. Every week I see all these people breaking tennis racket strings. There's a need for somebody to come and make it easy for people to get their rackets fixed. There was no one locally. So I borrowed $500 off my dad, which was quite a lot of money back then when you're 13, and said, "Dad, can I start a little tennis racket stringing business?" So, you know, I charged $150 to string people's rackets. So I was stringing, you know, between 10 and 15 a night. It was costing me about $40 a racket, and it took me 22 minutes to do it. So I was making a fair amount of money at the age of 13 and a half. But it was a ripping little business.
$40 a racket for stringing it is what your profit? You were doing 10 of them, so about $400 a night?
Yeah. When I was pretty keen to roll it through. It was
a lot of money for a teenager. What'd you do with all the money?
I saved up and bought my first car, to be honest.
I see. What was the car?
It was a General Motors car, but you don't have the brand of General Motors in the United States. It was a Holden Commodore. It was a surf wagon. So I got to go. First thing I could do is when I was turned 18, which is the legal driving age in Australia, is I could go surfing by myself and explore the world. So it was good.
Oh, I'm looking at photos of the car. That's a cool car.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Surf wagon.
Well, all right, I get it.
The car's all about what the girls like, right? That was the whole purpose of it.
It's not, or it is.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah, it definitely is. I see that.
Definitely. All right. So it wasn't too good for the girls, but it was great for the surfing.
Man, I'm so surprised, dude, that you then would go on to GM. Why did you go on to corporate? I was going to say corporate America, but I mean like corporate Australia. Why'd you go into the corporate world?
So I think this is the story for some entrepreneurs, maybe not all of them, but yeah, I was pretty good at school. I got good grades. And then I naturally just got into accounting or commerce. You do a major of commerce in Australia, and I got good marks in there. I didn't do a whole lot of work, but I managed to scrape my way through. And then KPMG picked me up and said, "Hey, you know, why don't you come and be a chartered accountant? You know, you won't have to, your career's set, your security's set. There's a destiny of a good income, a safe family, and all of those things." And, you know, to their word, it was true. It was just, it was boring as hell. And I hated working in the past. And what you find with, especially back then, is accountants, and in accountancy, you worked in the past and you couldn't be part of creating something in the future.
I never thought of it like that. Yeah, you're trying to figure out how much money we made last year, how much money we spent last month, right? You're not trying to figure out how do we do more next year.
Yeah, and I think with, I think some accounting has evolved into getting much more into the forecasting and things like that, but it wasn't creating products or creating technology or, you know, changing the way people buy things. And that's really where my mind was at. I definitely wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to lead people.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do something with my life. I didn't care whether I failed at it because I had nothing to lose back then. I think it's difficult once you've got kids and wives and all those types of things. I think it's a whole lot harder. But we had nothing to lose. I had a good job to fall back onto. And we just really, we gave it a crack and launched.
So 2006, you and your buddy from back when you guys were just kids from 5 years old, you sit, you talk, and you say, "Hey, you know what? The world needs a classified site for bikes." Why did the world need a classified site for bikes? What about Craigslist, eBay, Amazon? Couldn't people just go to any one of these sites and just buy a bike? Or their local bike store if that's what they want to do?
Yeah, so what we found is that when we just looked at it, there were more bikes sold in the Australian market back then than cars. So there was roughly 1.1 million bikes sold, and there was only 900,000 cars sold. And then if we looked at the average order value of a bike, and it was really in the Lance era, is the average order value was going up and up and up. So some guys in Australia were spending, and girls were spending, $15,000 to $20,000 on a bike. And then there was nowhere to sell it effectively. And then there were over 800 brands of bikes, of which, you know, there were really only 10 brands available on sort of the traditional, you know, auction sites. So there was nowhere to find, buy, and sell a bike. And that's where we come up with the idea of bike exchange, create the little stock exchange for bikes. Everyone always thought we'd come up with a name so you can exchange a bike, which which has been a challenge that we've had to overcome. But, you know, what we've been able to do is create the world's largest bike marketplace now in nine countries, with millions and millions of visitors a month, with, you know, close to close to sort of 600,000 cycling dedicated products for sale and amazing advice and service that goes with it.
Okay. And so actually, now that I think about it, I realized earlier today that I never did buy a bike from Amazon. I keep looking at it thinking I'm going to get a great bike deal, but they always have these cheapo bikes. And at this point, I'm not ready for a cheapo bike from Amazon. I'll get like a really busted up bike that I can drive in the bad neighborhood of San Francisco, and that I'll pick up for $50 off of Craigslist. Or I want a really high end bike, and that I want to go into the store. I want to get fitted. I want to make sure that it actually feels right. They'll even let me ride it around the block if I give my ID. And that's the experience I want for the higher end bike. And so that's what you thought other people were looking for. In fact, I assumed before we talked that you were allowing individuals to sell to each other. But the way you populated your marketplace in the beginning was by asking who to sell on your marketplace. It wasn't individuals.
No, it wasn't. It was individuals could, but that's not where we got the scale from. Is that the reality is a bike store is they're smaller businesses, and they're not experts in marketing. They're not experts in content management. So what we saw that there was a need to actually give exposure to these small bike stores and drive people both in store and online. So what we did is we created good processes and systems and a good community where we made it easy for bike shops to sell to consumers who wanted to find their products. And if you think about some of those larger marketplaces like Amazon, they didn't exist in the Australian market back then. But then B, it's really hard to service a passionate, driven, tribal-based community like cycling to that depth. It's really hard to be everything to everybody. But what we found, if we could be something to somebody and give them great advice, give them great reviews, give them service around how to choose a bike, what are the tips in how to ride a bike, but then also go and get all the brands, all the makes, all the models, all the accessories and everywhere where you can buy them from. We found that there was a real need for it and consumers come to it in droves.
And that's how you brought in the consumers. But the interesting thing to me is, well, I guess they're both interesting, both sides of the marketplace, that I would think, how do I get the most individuals into my marketplace? You thought, how do I get the most bikes in my marketplace? And the way to do that was to partner with bike shops, allow them to list their products and get a bigger audience than they would from the people who might be walking down the street and looking for bikes. You actually did a tour of the country, am I right, to try to find all these bike shops?
Yeah, we didn't take my first Holden Commodore because I didn't get to make it that far. But we drove up the east coast of Australia, my buddy and I. And we went surfing and had some beers and did a bit of riding at the same time. And we basically door knocked every one of these bike stores. There were only 400 of them. So you could say we had a fair few meetings, but we...
400 on the east coast of Australia or 400 in the whole country?
Yeah, there's about 600 in the whole country and there's about 400 on the east coast. But okay. I remember one day in this little town called Coffs Harbour and we walked into this bike store. This would have been in 2007, probably the March of 2007. And we walked into this bike store and we got chased out.
Why?
The internet's the devil. The internet's still my business. So, we had, not only did we have to create the demand from a seller and a buyer perspective, is we had to put a lot of time and energy in our community into, in some respects, a community of sellers that really didn't understand the power of the internet and how to really engage with that internet. And by making it easy for stores to list their products and in many instances actually listing them for them and then teaching them how to content market and teaching them how to have good service around answering the phone and responding to emails and then shipping items on the same day in a reliable manner, what we were able to do is we were able to really create a community of sellers that have made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars out of bike exchange in a pretty small market, which was the Australian market.
What was your commission on sales back then?
5%.
Okay, 5% of what was sold. I wonder though, how did you get the shop owners to come back and update the photos? I understand the first time they're excited, someone's potentially going to help them sell. They put some effort into it, but as soon as a bike sold, they have to remember to remove it. In fact, even on Craigslist, I know that they're pain. Sometimes things are sold and people don't remove it until they get hassled about it enough that they finally get it down.
Yeah, it was a challenge at the start with these businesses because there was no such thing as an API or integrations into, you know, to websites or to POSs. And as we're so, you know, what we did it the old-fashioned way. We listened to customers. We you know, we had really strong KPIs that every store needs to be contacted every 2 weeks so that we could go through their account, we could update it. We built inventory systems so when we sold one online, it would automatically come off. And you know, these systems or processes didn't exist. We were inventing them, and we were listening to our customer. And we were, you know, I nearly find it like young love. You know, when you're young, you don't care about the girls you go out with. You're not ruling out every girl that you see. But by the time if you're single and you're 30, you've got all of this criteria about what not to do. We as entrepreneurs, we were in young love mode. You know, we just did it because we wanted to do a good thing and we'd give it a crack. And I think that was a huge advantage because we were prepared to fail, and we're prepared to fail fast, but we led our community down a path of, you know what, we might make some mistakes here as we go, but back us in and, you know what, we'll listen to you and we'll be honest with you and we'll create a trusted environment. And if we do that, then we can create a community where everyone has benefits and everyone can belong to it and everyone can, you know, eventually for the sellers have a great economic impact.
Okay, so that's how you got the sellers on board. What about the customers? Talk about some of the things that you did to bring them in, both like the hand-to-hand combat stuff where you actually go out and talk to your potential customers and the online stuff that brought them in. What did it?
Yeah, so yeah, I think if you look at Sam and I back in we were 25, 26, we were amazing promo girls, right? Like we would walk around these events and we would hand out cards to say, if you want to buy and sell a bike, there's a bike exchange. But we did it on scale. So we'd go to, it's probably the equivalent of the Tour of California in the United States. But we would go to the Tour Down Under, which was a pro tour event, and we would hand out close to 50 to 60,000 of these cards in a week.
would hand them out to individual people there. If you want to buy a bike, here's the place to do it.
Yeah. If you want to sell your bike, here's the place to do it.
Didn't you feel like I was working at General Motors? I was working on big projects. I'm now handing this out like a 13-year-old kid could do.
Yeah, it was very funny. I'll never forget the day, but on that same day, somebody bought their first product on Bike Exchange and we made 5%. And then I thought, hang on a second here, we can make money in our sleep.
I see. And so it wasn't like you said, I just made 5%, that's less than minimum wage. You said, hey, this is a great start. I can actually make some money while I see.
That's right. And there were more bikes sold than cars. So if we can pick up this percentage and the 5% of that. And then we created some modern revenue streams around a membership base for the sellers where they could list all their products, unlimited, get unlimited results, but they'd pay us a monthly membership fee. So, you know, there's lots of talk around creating membership economies today and creating a sense of belongings and benefits over a lifelong. But we really created that in 2007. So, and that's how we grew our business. We created a membership economy or a subscription economy where we created benefits to our sellers where they'd pay us a monthly fee. They'd receive more benefit than the fee, and we were able to self-fund our business and grow our business out of that.
What are the benefits that you gave members in the beginning?
There's a little bit of faking it till you make it because we didn't give them a whole lot. But we gave them a vision that they could believe in. Well, they believed that there were more bikes sold in Australia. They believed that it was a good enough idea to create Bike Exchange, because they couldn't get online, they couldn't SEO their products, they couldn't SEO or search optimize their products, they couldn't create a big enough audience where they could really cut through in the online space. And that's what we've been able to do for a long period of time.
You said, look, everything's going online and there are tons of bikes being sold. This is going to be your way of getting online and getting a piece of this business. This growing industry. But there were no big features. What was the big killer feature that finally did bring people in and that was actually the selling point?
I think it's really hard as a marketplace to pin down a killer feature. Like, I think for there's features and functions that you develop over a period of time, but I think in business, if you sell features and functions, you're dead. What you need to do is you need to create a community where people actually believe in it. But I'll give you a couple of tips that really help in onboarding sellers. Yeah. And we've launched it on scale now at a marketplace level, is we created a central product warehouse. And this is where we invested heavily in product data for our niches. So when sellers wanted to place an ad, they could select the make, the model, and boom, the images had come up, the descriptions had come up. So they didn't have to go and get their old Casio camera and take photos of it. They could actually do it on scale, and we could get scalability behind our product advert system. Mm-hmm. And we did that. And then that just adapted into integrations and into live and inventory. And now with Bike Exchange, you know, consumers can buy with confidence because we actually have live inventory from, you know, the majority of our stores. We know what the, you know, we know what they've got in stock, when they can dispatch it. If they search online, they can go into a store with confidence that that bike is in the store as well.
But they get that even if they're not members. What's the big thing that brings people into the membership?
Oh, the sales. That's simple.
But you help them. Well, what do they get for membership? They can't list unless they're members?
Yeah, they can't list unless they're members.
I see. So they needed a monthly fee in order to list. Got it. Okay. All right. Let me take a moment here to talk about my sponsor, come back and talk a little bit more about how you got more consumers into your marketplace to actually buy, and then talk about how you expand it to other marketplaces, and finally about your software to allow people to create marketplaces for themselves. It's called Marketplacer. Let's get into a sponsor. And my sponsor is a company called Pipedrive. It's a tool that both of us actually use, Jason and I. Jason, how do you guys use Pipedrive to help you close more sales at Marketplacer?
So we use Pipedrive in the majority of our marketplaces. Our marketplaces use it, and that's to onboard sellers. So we find it a really effective, scalable tool where you can put people through your different pipes and manage your sales funnel to close them. And then we recently set up a new Pipedrive for Marketplacer for people who are contacting us all over the world who want to create successful marketplaces. We use Pipedrive again to take them through that customer journey. And to hopefully make them value customers over a long period of time.
So every time there's something new you want to sell, you create a new pipeline in Pipedrive to manage it. Pipedrive forces you to say, what are the steps involved in taking somebody brand new and turning them into a customer? And then as a team, you all collaborate to move people through that process. That's what we do too. Every time there's something new that I want to sell, I create a new Pipedrive for it so that I can keep it organized. And there are parts of the system that I may not want to do myself. Frankly, there are most of them. And Pipedrive allows me to collaborate. So if you guys are out there and you're doing sales one-to-one via email, phone call, etc., you need Pipedrive. If you're going big, meaning like thousands of emails, everything happens on a landing page and people buy without talking to a person or interacting with a person, it's not for you. But if you're trying to sell by communicating with people one-on-one, email, messenger, Facebook, Facebook Messenger, chat, phone especially, this is the system that will help you get organized and allow your whole team to support you in moving people to completion. And by the way, one of my favorite features on Pipedrive is if we lose a sale, whoever lost the sale has to just move the card into the loss column and tell us why, so that at the end of the month or at the end of the year, I can go in and see why have we lost sales and do something to fix it in the future. If you want to sign up for Pipedrive, they're making an incredible offer to everyone listening to me right now. All you have to do is go to pipedrive.com/mixergy, and they're going to give you 14 days of free Pipedrive. You'll see how you can actually close sales in those 14 days, and 25% off for the next 3 months after that. Go check them out at pipedrive.com/mixergy. Okay, one more thing. I've noticed as I've looked at your marketplaces, Jason, that you guys do SEO really well today. And you told me before that SEO played a part from the beginning. What did you do to bring in traffic from just people who are searching on Google? What was it that helped you guys get traffic in the early days?
Yeah, and I think this is a core element of a difference between a marketplace and a pure play or an e-commerce site, is that what a marketplace has the ability to do is go after that long tail. What I mean by long tail, you can get all the, you know, if you take Bike Exchange, you take Giant, Road Bike, TCR in the suburbs. So you can go after your geographic long tail, you can go after your model search, and you can do it on scale. So if you look at the bike market, there's 900 brands and, you know, thousands and thousands of individual models. what we can do, we can go after them in both model-based search and also at a geographic base. So what we've been able to do over a long period of time is learn some tricks around creating marketplaces that drive traffic for marketplaces. What we're not doing is taking a e-commerce platform and trying to get marketplace traffic, because I think they're different strategies. But what we've been able to do is build that over a long period of time in a really appropriate way. I always say when people with Google, the best way to attract Google is to become popular. That's the number one thing. Then you've got to have good on-page, then you've got to have good off-page, but never try and cheat Google. You'll get short-term wins, but in the long term, if you have great content, a great customer experience, mobile-friendly, a really good site structure, focus on the terms that you can win at, and I think that's a pretty sound basics for SEO.
Yeah, I'm looking, like, one of the terms that sends traffic to Bike Exchange right now is Bennett Bicycles, which I'm guessing is a bike shop in Staten Island, New York. And that's the kind of thing that would send traffic over to you. If I were looking for them, I might end up on your site where I get to see their inventory all cleanly laid out. And I get to, in this case, not buy all their inventory, but contact the seller, I guess, about buying each product.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing with, you also get the, you also promote the sellers into Google. What you often find is, as a small business, it's pretty hard to become SEO legends in your own right. But by partnering with marketplaces, what you can actually do is get some genuine SEO traffic and grow your brand through the marketplace traffic and the benefits that a marketplace brings to you as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're building this thing up. You take funding or no?
No.
Never.
We've taken considerable amounts of funding in the last 2 years. But we went for a very long time with no funding. What we did, though, is in 2012, we won Australian Business of the Year. And on the back of that, we got a huge amount of publicity. You know, these two young punks who were traveling around the country riding their bikes and surfing created this just really fun community that was a really good story. But then we got inundated by people saying, hey, that's a great idea. Can I create a classified or a marketplace site for home products? Can I create one for babies and kids products or for outdoor products? So what we thought is, how do we grow? Like, you know, we need passion behind creating marketplaces. We need some money. We haven't got enough money to do all of these marketplaces. We've got no chance. What do we have? Well, we've got some know-how. We've got some knowledge. We've got some experience now. And we've got a technology stack that we use for our bike business. So then what we did is we partnered and we joint ventured with smart, passionate entrepreneurs who had a passion for their industry, had a little bit of capital, but most importantly had the hunger to be an entrepreneur. And we did 50-50 joint ventures where they funded their marketplace, the profitability, mm-hmm. and we provided the knowledge, the know-how, the technology, and you know the emotional support sometimes you need in creating a marketplace. And we did that on a smaller scale basis. So we did Tiny Trader for baby and kids products, House of Home for homeware products. We partnered with one of Australia's most successful businessmen for outdoor products. We grabbed partnered with a big Instagram account now for Lenzo for party products. We created a travel marketplace called Go See Australia.
I'm on one of the sites right now, House of Home. I could see how for home products it would make a lot of sense. I have an abhorrence for anything IKEA because every time you go to someone's house, they all have the same IKEA stuff. So you don't feel like you're in your own home. You feel like when you're back at your house, you're in every other friend's house. I get how even some of the higher end stores are now repeating the same stuff over and over again. And I understand why someone would want to come to the site and buy something unique. I'm wondering is, why didn't you just sell them the software? Monthly basis, $100 or $1,000 or price per hit on their site. They get to use your software. They get your support. Why partner up with them instead of giving them your software, instead of selling the software?
It's a really good question. it's just the strategy we took at that time. We thought that there was lots of fragmented industries and that we could grow the equity base of our business by partnering in this strategy. It was just the strategy we took in the Australian market. And now we have, you know, millions of products for sale from thousands and thousands of retailers and hundreds of thousands of private sellers in the Australian market. But I think what else was interesting is that we didn't know it, but we had to really adapt the platform. So we've literally spent the last 5 years throwing away that old code base, building a new code base that is scalable in a way where people can create any form of marketplace anywhere in the world very quickly on scale. And back then, our technology didn't stack up, so we didn't want to stick our name behind and our brand behind not being able to create successful marketplaces. What we wanted to do is take people on a journey, put our own skin in the game, our own blood, sweat and tears to help other people create it. But now, you know, we're really proud. Last month, we finally announced that we've got our technology in the position where it's in a really great spot. We've got our community management in a position where it's in a really great spot, and we can create and help others to create marketplaces on scale.
So now it is SaaS. Now I can go in and sign up. I can't pay for it and implement it on my own at this point, but I can pick the plan that I want, contact one of the salespeople there, and have a team from your company come and set it up for me so that I can get started if I wanted to add a marketplace for Mixergy, for example, or if I had this idea that we need a standing desk revolution and I was going to create my marketplace for that, right?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Am I right to understand that part of the reason why you decided to partner with other people is so that you get to see on the inside how they're using your software, work with them when the software breaks, as opposed to having them say, hey, you know what? We tried this vendor doesn't do what we need. Let's go try another vendor, right? They're committed to you. You have inside information from them, and together you learn a little bit more so that you could create software to sell on a SaaS basis in the future.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we did is we did it in different industries in different ways. So like we did a ticketing and sports and entertainment marketplace in Kickstart. And what you'll find is in creating any business, there's always features and functions that you'll want that don't exist somewhere. But what you need is you need to back a partner who has a track record, in my experience, who has actually been successful in the industry that you're trying to do, who has a community of like-minded people who can all help you out. And then over a long period of time, the features and functions will come. And that's exactly what we've been able to do with our partners. And we've been able to go on that journey together, and we'll continue to go on that journey and create that community behind the people who license our technology and join our community on a SaaS basis.
What are some of the things that you learn by partnering up with people who are using your software that you might not have learned if they were just signing up for software and using it on their own?
I learn, it's funny, like, because when we started our business, we were 25, and you know, we were footloose and free. We didn't have a whole lot to lose. We were both relatively single. But some of our entrepreneurs have a lot to lose. You know, they've got families and they've got houses on the line. And what I learned is that being entrepreneur is that you've got to really commit to something that's gonna win, and you've got to take it incredibly serious. And I know it's a serious and more of a dour note, but we take the role of taking on a client incredibly seriously, and that we say no a lot because we just don't think it's a good idea. And through our experience, we say don't create a marketplace. You know, go create a Shopify account, and that's completely fine because you should buy some stock and sell some stock. It hasn't got enough fragmentation. It's not going to scale at the rate. You're not going to be able to create a big enough sense of belonging, all of the attributes of creating a successful marketplace. So, you know, I think that's the most important thing, that the stuff that entrepreneurs do really, really matters. So that's the biggest lesson I took out of it.
That you couldn't have done a minimum viable product here. You needed to have something really strong. And if I'm understanding, first of all, is that right?
Yeah, well, I think if you just do minimal viable product, you get a minimal result. Why wouldn't you take 10 years of experience, 10 years of a technology stack at an incredibly affordable rate and the scale fast?
And then you also realize we can't just give them the software. We also have to help them promote this. And so you worked with them on search engine optimization, am I right? You worked with them on ad buys, am I right?
Yeah, so we work with our marketplaces on sales techniques, on how to onboard sellers, customer service philosophies around how to create a great customer experience, how to create the right form of content. So we've got 10 years of experience in processes and systems in creating marketplaces that you know really gets shared amongst our whole community. And then the other thing that's really interesting is it can be lonely as an entrepreneur sometimes. And that fear of failure and those feelings that you have, if you've got other like-minded people who are out there in a non-competitive way, but you can bounce ideas off in a community, it's incredibly powerful. These are people who are creating and have created successful marketplaces globally that all want to contribute to our community so everyone can be a better them, if that makes sense.
How are you helping them all talk to each other? Like Tiny Trader is the site where I can go and buy car seats for my baby. How are you helping that founder speak with the founder of House of Home, where I can buy products for my house like kitchenware? What are you doing to allow them to learn from each other?
Yeah, so we do some really fun things, and we're going to continue to do more, but we'll do a monthly podcast where we'll interview sort of the local founders and take them through their success stories and some real case studies about the lessons they've learned. We have a really good educational hub on how to educate and, to onboard sellers and to create it. So what we're trying to do is to create I haven't branded it yet, but a marketplace, a university, and an education and a center of excellence in there so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time. And then every year we have an annual conference where we can get together and we can actually collaborate as fellow marketplaces and bounce ideas off and say, hey, this didn't work, this did work, and together we'll be stronger is our mindset.
You know what? One thing I've noticed as I've gone through some of the stores is they're products that I can't just buy. What you do is you link me to the store owner via email or phone. Why is it that I can't, for example, buy this bowl set from House of Home? Why do I have to call them up?
It's actually one of the key differences behind our mindset is that we want to take our retailers on a journey, and some retailers and some brands just don't want to sell online, but they still need to be found online. And some consumers don't want to buy online. They want to find out what's in store. So we say that there's five ways consumers interact with retailers and sellers. Sometimes they want to call up a store. Sometimes they want to email a store. Sometimes they want to visit a store. Sometimes they want to click and collect. And sometimes they want to buy. We don't say to our sellers, you must sell online, because if you're not ready and you can't provide a great experience, don't do it. But what you do need to do is drive people back into your store. So what we've tried to come up with, and we have come up with, is a way where we drive consumers back into stores if that's where they want to shop, or we drive them online. We educate our sellers around how to answer the phone and techniques around how to convert them, around how to answer emails and to create an experience, not just the process. Around how to handle people when they do come into their stores after they've shopped around online and they're educated. The consumers, it's powerful as a consumer now. Like, to think as a business, to think that your consumer is not research is a bit naive in the modern world. Mm-hmm. So what we try to do is we try to say, okay, if you're looking for a bed, and there's not great shipping for ugly products anywhere in the world, in my experience, so... And to be honest, there's not much that great experience around shopping online. Even if you buy it online, 9 times out of 10, it turns up 10 weeks later because they've got to manufacture it. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to spend your weekend driving around all the furniture stores looking for the bed that suits you or looking for the style that suits you. So what we've basically done is we've enabled the classified world and the transactional marketplace world to form into one.
Okay.
So you can filter out the products that you can't buy online. So if you just want to shop online, you can. You can filter out the products that you can just shop in store, or you can search for both. But it's that ease, convenience, and choice of a marketplace that we've been able to facilitate to our tribes.
And so now you don't charge a percentage of the sale, and now you charge a listing fee, and that also gives you a little more secure revenue.
Yeah, so what we've done in there is we've created a membership economy. So, and you can charge a listing fee, which we've got a listing fee module at Marketplace. So we've got a membership module where you can charge a monthly membership, or you can charge per inquiry. So what we've been able to do is, through different marketplaces, we've tried all the different revenue streams in the different industries, we've developed all the revenue modules so you can scale at will at fast.
I see. All right, let me take a moment to talk about my sponsor, and then I want to come back and ask you about what your revenues are, because we've talked about how much you're helping other people create marketplaces. I want to know how your marketplaces are doing. I want to find out what kind of business can actually create a marketplace and how it would work. To get customers, to get sellers, et cetera. And finally, what does it mean when you said that we were mostly single? It sounds like there's something behind that. I'll talk to you about that too. First, I'm going to take a moment to talk about my sponsor. And the sponsor is a company called TopTal. I've told you guys about TopTal for a long time, about how when we needed somebody to rebuild our site, that's where we went to get things started, to find a great developer. But first, instead of me telling you again about me, I'll tell you about one of our listeners. There's a listener named Brett Staper. Or is it Stapper? Brett, let me know how I should pronounce your last name. Who emailed me? He said, "Andrew, I'm a member of Mixergy. I'm a huge fan of your show. And I just wanted to drop you a note to let you know that we started working with TopTal after hearing about them on your show, and it's been a complete game changer for us." I should tell you guys, it's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent. "We've always," he goes on to say, "we've always just patched together design and dev projects from," and he lists a bunch of sites you guys know. There are tons of different places where you can go and hire developers. He says, "We've always ended up with okay quality. And frankly, you will get okay. I can't rag on those other people. You'll get okay quality from them." But he goes on to say, "We're launching a new project and decided this time, okay just wasn't going to cut it. So we went with TopTal. 2 weeks in and it's by far the best looking design we've ever had. So thank you for the tip and thank you so much for the awesome show. As a youngish entrepreneur, it's truly a huge impact on me." And that again is from Brett, the CEO of Hack PR. Brett and so many other people who've listened to me have gone to TopTal because they know that TopTal prides itself on getting the best developers in its network. So when you need to hire someone, you don't have to go through months of looking and talking to dozens and dozens of people. You talk to TopTal, they have a matcher on the phone with you, you tell them what you're looking for, and you can hire someone for a project, full-time, part-time, a team of people, whatever you need. And they have a wide range of specialties. So if you're looking for a great developer, you owe it to yourself to go do what so many people in the Mixergy audience have done. Go check out this special URL where you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Go to toptal.com/Mixergy for that. That's TOPTAL.com/MIXERGY. To get that special offer from them. All right, why don't we start with the revenue? So you've built a marketplace. Can you give me the numbers? I know you're not going to give me the numbers for your whole business, but what about like Bike Exchange? How much revenue is that doing from this marketplace?
We don't give our revenue numbers to anybody.
Okay. Even that, the first time I asked you, I couldn't get it.
No, well, we don't, because we're on a journey, and we're very deliberately on a journey. But I can tell you that we're in 9 countries. We've got scale behind our business, behind a business like Bike Exchange and Cycling Tips. All of our businesses, 95% of them have hit profitability already. So we're in a really of our investment businesses, we're in a really good spot. And then Marketplace is, it's a really interesting proposition for us because, we've had...
Wait, sorry, just 1 second. And by the way, I can't stop looking at Bike Exchange. I told you before we started that I bought a bike trainer so I can exercise in the backyard. Your freaking photos really are beautiful. They keep sucking me in because I see the one that I have. You asked me before we started what I'm using. I'm using a Kinect. And I wish that, it's Kinetic, sorry. I wish that I bought one of the even smarter trainers than that. But can you give me like a sense of scale? Are we talking about a site that's doing over 5 million a year, over 1 million a year, over 50? Where are we roughly with this?
You're a bit cheeky because you said a higher number than you did the first time.
Oh, really? I don't remember what I said the first. Give me just any sense of it. I don't want to.
We're definitely doing over 5 million.
So, you're doing over 5 on Bike Exchange alone?
Yeah, definitely.
On Bike Exchange alone, and it's all through Marketplace?
Yeah.
And we're not talking about the overall sales of all the trainers that are sold and all the bikes. We're talking about your cut.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Marketplace could be that big.
Well, marketplaces need to be that big. Like they need to be bigger than that, in my opinion. You've got to pick an industry that scales. If you're going to put your blood, sweat, and tears into an industry, pick one that can scale en masse and can scale globally. So, and that's our mindset behind creating marketplaces. It's minimal effort, maximum return. They're pretty hard, like to, because you've got to, it's different to a pure product business or an e-commerce business where, you know, you develop your product, which I'm not saying is not hard, but then you market and you sell it, you make a margin. With a marketplace, you've got to onboard sellers, you've got to create a community,
right.
You've got to find out how to merchandise that community. So, but when you do it on mass, you definitely reap the rewards. And if you think about a traditional retail business, on exit, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs create businesses to sell them, which is completely fine. But on exit, they, you know, a retail business would get 1 to 2 times revenue at best. A marketplace, really, if you look at the marketplace valuations, they get 10 times net revenue as long as you're going, sustainable growth. Because they grab the whole market and they get triple digit growth. So there's very few businesses that can sustainably grow triple digit for year and year and year on end.
I guess, and it's also that it's a higher margin business, right? If you're reselling your own products, the large chunk of the expense is, I mean, the large charge of the revenue is the product itself, right? But with the marketplace, it's less.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, marketplaces can easily run between, and it's proven around the world, that they can easily run between 40 and 60% EBITDA. So they can be incredibly profitable businesses when you get it going. And then, you know, the other attribute behind it is there's no boundaries, there's no capital constraints around opening stores, and there's no capital constraints around inventory, there's no obsolescence risk, and they're modern. You know, the largest hotel business in the world doesn't own a hotel, it's a marketplace. The largest taxi business in the world doesn't own a taxi.
You're talking about Uber and Airbnb.
Definitely. So they're scalable businesses that are not constrained. The rules that apply to a marketplace don't apply to it.
Right. So what kind of businesses do you think would do well as marketplaces? What kind of products would do well?
So what I like around industries or markets is when you can create a community of like-minded people. So there's a couple of businesses that I think are going to turn into marketplaces. So I think big retailers are going to turn into marketplaces. They have to. You know,
Nordstrom's is going to have a marketplace?
I'll tell you what, I'll bet you a beer that Nordstrom's will have a marketplace within 18 months.
Within 18 months? I'll do that. A beer that, yeah. Nordstrom's going to have a marketplace. So I won't just be able to buy Nordstrom stuff, but I'll also be able to buy from other people on their site.
Yeah, 100%. Because in it, retail's too tough at the moment. It's too hard out there. You've got to hold all the inventory yourself. You've got to manufacture it. You've got to go expensive leases. You've got an expensive cost of delivery and labor rates. And what a marketplace gives you, it gives you an endless aisle. So you're not constrained by your lease structure. You're not constrained by warehouse. It gives you a borderless world. You can onboard sellers from all over the world into an audience that can get you into a market. It gives you an audience that you can monetize from a media perspective. It gives you a membership economy. So what you're finding is businesses will turn into marketplaces, I think the large retailers, at a rapid rate. We're seeing it in the Australian market. We're partnering with some large retailers that are going to turn into marketplaces, which I can't disclose just yet. I wish I could. And we're getting approached every single day from all retailers all over the world. And what you're going to find, the other thing is when there's a highly fragmented industry of like-minded products, that there's many brands, there's many sellers, there's many consumers. It's a considered purchase. You know, it's not an unconsidered purchase. I think you'll see marketplaces pop up all over the time.
Let's go through examples. So who might be listening to us who should actually create a marketplace? What's an example of someone out there? Nordstrom's people aren't listening to this. They're doing Nordstrom-y stuff. They're listening to some business podcast. What's an example of someone who might be listening who should be considering a marketplace right now?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. Some of the most interesting inquiries we're getting at the moment are actually B2B marketplaces. So this is where you're a large distributor,
uh-huh,
and you've got a huge market to penetrate into, but you're constrained by your current distribution strategy. And how can you bring other sellers on board and sell it to your retailer, your stores and retailers? I think we'd probably get 10 to 15 approaches a day from all over the world from that.
For example, what's type of B2B company? I'm looking around here to see what's a B2B business that I've interacted with, and all I use is software and Mac.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But if you think of any product, chances are it's gone through a traditional distribution model. Whether it's a brand being imported into the company, there'll be a distributor that sells that to retailers. And what we're finding is that they're turning them, you know, like we've been approached from a horse distributor.
Horse distributor.
Yeah. So what he wants to do for all of equestrian products, he wants to create an equestrian marketplace. You know, there's millions of people that ride horses, and their products are highly fragmented, and they want to sell to millions of people. So that's a prime example.
Okay, that's a fragmented market, big audience, maybe don't have a good place. They don't have a home to go buy from. How does he then start building up an audience? I imagine he doesn't have a big email list. He doesn't have a big presence, doesn't have a big brand name. How does he start out? I get the opportunities out there, but to find customers and to find sellers is tough for marketplaces. What would you recommend?
It really does depend on each vertical themselves, but you've got to think in the same mindset around traditional digital marketing. So you've got to have a strong SEO foundation and a strong platform that delivers SEO results. We use our data and insights platform on all of our marketplaces to actually understand our customer. So what we do is we grab our first party data, so who's interacting with our marketplace, and then we grab second and third party data, whether it be Mosaic segmentation tooling, and you know, there's lots of different segmentation and second and third party data that you can overlay to get some really deep insights about who your customer is, where they're behaving, what they're doing, how they're interacting. And then what we do is we form an effective communication strategy. So what we try to do is we try to create perfect customer segments, and then we target those perfect customer segments, and we go find them in audiences of where they're at. And you know, in social media and in Google, you can target these perfect customer segments now. And what we find is when we do that, we convert at a much higher rate, we convert with a more relevant, meaningful message, and we convert on scale.
I see. So I imagine then I'd use your tools to do some SEO to understand how I can buy ads. And that's how I would bring in the audience. Bringing in the sellers probably would be something like what you did. Contact sellers individually, maybe create a Pipedrive account to try to figure out who's out there selling, what are the local stores, and have them list on my platform.
Yeah, and then like as you become more mature in your thinking, and bigger businesses, what they're starting to do is say, okay, how can we do a joint venture and create instead of fighting each other head to head, why don't we create a marketplace together and share in the marketplace wealth? So what we're finding is big retailers are approaching us as well and saying, all right, do you know what? We're in this market. We've got the market between, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 sellers. Why don't we create a marketplace above it? We'll join forces and we'll create a marketplace fast on scale. And we've seen that a few times as well.
I see. Do you think I should create one at Mixergy? I've got an audience of entrepreneurs. Would a marketplace make sense?
What do they want to buy?
That's an interesting question. It's usually software. It's not, or services, I guess.
Yeah, so if I would say, if you had a large community, which you do have a large community, and you've done a tribe, people believe in you, and you said to all of... for all of the great tools and software out there, could I create a classified or a marketplace where people could go to Mixergy and they could find all the great tools in creating startups from all over the world, and it was a one-stop shop for a startup or a growth business in their journey. And then people could go on and you could create a community behind it, and they could they could rate and review those products and services, and it was a trusted source of truth, and that you weren't selling your soul to the devil, for a better word, and selling out, then I think that there's a compelling need for people for that service. And I don't know of anywhere that does that well today. So whether it's a classified site or a marketplace, you know, I probably think it's fragmented enough that there's a need behind it, and you know, people would use it, and I think your sellers would probably pay for the privilege.
So then why use your platform instead of some of the other platforms that are out there? Why use Marketplacer?
Well, there's a few reasons. Is that,
oh no,
successful marketplaces.
Oh good, I thought we lost you again. Yeah, sorry, you're yeah, saying there are a few reasons, and then a pause for a second. I said, no, I just lost him again.
No. So the first and most importantly is we've got a proven track record. We've created successful marketplaces in all forms of categories over 10 years. We've got a proven track record in our technology in that we know that it scales at rapid rate. We've got great processes and procedures that people can tap into. And then most importantly, you can belong to a community of like-minded people that are actually creating marketplaces, so you can learn from them. You can not make the mistakes. You can, you know, get some of the insights that I've shared today. I hope people are finding useful. But these are the insights that we want our community to share amongst each other on a continual basis. So what we say is, why, if you were going to create an essay or a novel, you're not going to go and create Microsoft Word, right? What we've been able to do is create a really scalable, proven marketplace platform that can that you can use for an incredible affordable rate in comparison.
What's the price? I can't see it on your pricing page or on your plan page.
Yeah, so it starts from $1,500 US a month, mm-hmm. and then depending on what bundle you want, the maximum, the highest for everything is $6,000 US a month. To use all of our features and functions and community. So that's not even one developer. I can't say how many developers I have, how much money I've spent creating the technology over 10 years. But what we say is that it's a fully hosted solution. So you don't have to worry about hosting or technology or around all the features and functions you need to be successful. What you need to do is you need to get out there and create that community, understand the marketing plan, understand the sales plan, focus on creating a good experience around onboarding sellers, around going to get traffic, getting everybody results, and leave the technology and that side of it to us. And over a long period of time, I think you'll be a big winner, and we've proven it in many instances.
Now I'm getting like lenzo.com.au, one of your, this is the one that's created by the Instagram star that that you mentioned earlier. She does Instagram photos of events, of parties, and now on her site, I guess it's going to be hire people to work at my party or buy stuff for my party, right?
Yeah, Lenzo is one of our newest ones. So it's a new community, and it's a really interesting one because it actually uses the full suite. Because you want to hire services or hire mm-hmm. people like DJs and venues, then you want to buy cool balloons and products to dress your party. Then you want to then you might want to book a venue. So it uses our booking engine in there as well.
I see, yeah.
So it really uses a big gamut, and in I think Lenzo will even use our digital download technology where you can download your invitations to your party and customize them and personalize them. So it's a really cool one for us to be involved in, and we love it because it really stretches us.
And she's got a lot of stores in her platform already, a lot of sellers.
Yeah, she only launched in February, so she's going. She's amazing. She's an amazing individual, Eleni, and she's got a huge Instagram following and she's a great storyteller. If you look at the inspiration and amazing content that she produces, so she's a bit of a rock star of the Australian party scene, and we're really proud to be part of it.
That looks gorgeous. All right, for anyone who wants to check out your site, they should go to marketplacer.com. What a great domain. I heard you spent $1,500 on it. It's worth way more than that. Marketplacer.com. And of course, the two sponsors that I mentioned are the company that will help you close more sales. It's called pipedrive.com/Mixergy. And the company that will help you hire your next great developer, toptal.com/Mixergy. And Jason, thanks for recording this twice with me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, everyone.
Thanks.
See you later.
Bye.